Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have with us Peter, is it Duzaban? Is that right?
Pretty close. Jubin.
Jubin.
The DZI
okay.
makes a J sound, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Peter.
Sure.
Peter is the author of Consciousness is All, Now Life is Completely New. And this is a very, I guess, unique book in that it spans just about all of what consciousness, research, consciousness, thought, philosophy, religion, I guess science, everything that we have labeled to try to understand the manifested worlds, Peter has addressed in his book and has come up with some pretty amazing conclusions and pretty simple conclusions that help you put all of this in perspective, and really a very understandable book in my mind anyway.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's a logical conclusion too that things that appear very, very, very complicated at one point in time, and another point in time when the explanation is there, actually everything's very simple.
Yeah.
I discovered this when I was in studying biology. I went back and read all of the theories of what existed before Watson and Crick came up with the DNA theory of, you know, transference of life. And what was interesting is that they were very, very, very complicated. In fact, way too complicated to even exist in my mind. I mean, it was like you couldn't really wrap your mind around them and understand them. And then when Watson and Crick came out with their DNA model, it all made sense, and it had like a beauty and a symmetry, and a, you know, just the idea itself was very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I would like to suggest to our listeners, that your book has done for the complexity that is metaphysics, physics, philosophy, religion, you know, just on, all the different things whereby we try to understand what consciousness is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty, I don't know, succinct way of putting it, I guess. What was interesting during the writing of the book is that, and this is the first book I had ever written. I used to do some writing professionally before starting the book, but during the writing of it, there was this constant sort of anticipation of all these questions, or as if a potential reader was sitting there right next to me asking, okay, this, you know, I see this is clear, but what about this now?
Right.
And what about this now? And just having to, there also was always a feeling of, if this is true, if this is the truth, then it's going to hold up under the most rigorous questions. You can't sort of sweep a few of them under the rug and, you know, well, I'm just not going to deal with that, or say, oh, that's some sort of mystical mystery that only the divine knows and, you know, can't be clearly explained. So, and I think that was evident in the book.
It really is. I had, you know, I've studied many, many different masters, teachers, you know, and interviewed many physicists, scientists, consciousness researchers. I've been doing the radio show for about 17 years and do one show a week, so you can imagine I've talked to a lot of people.
That's a lot.
But, yeah. You know, I have always been aware of what you speak of in this book. And the awareness of it extends back as far back as I can remember and was with me when I was deathly ill. In fact, it was what got me out of the illness that was life-threatening.
Yeah,
I was very aware that it was, because, of course, when you're deathly ill, there's nothing else you can do but pay attention to this awareness, which is really very interesting. And then I wanted to share, though, when I was being taught the principles that you have in this book, I did it through experience, which I think you would agree is the best way to do it rather than just reading about it or thinking about it.
Yeah.
You talk about that in the book. Experience is absolutely critical. I was in the dream state and knew I was in the dream state. I was aware I was in the dream state. And then consciousness or absolute beingness or whatever you want to call it took me back behind the dream state, which was shown to me as being illusionary. And I think most of us would agree that our dreams are illusionary. And took me back to a center point and then brought me back into waking reality and then took me back out to a center point and then brought me back into a dream reality, and it happened 7 times. And I finally got it. Consciousness, which is what I am and what you are, and we are inseparable in that. In this reality, we are being projected by a consciousness that is eternal, never ending, never, you know, as you describe in your book, never, it cannot be boxed in, it cannot be separated.
Mm-hmm.
But our consciousness projects into various levels of vibration or, you know, you talk about the universal mind as one of these, you talk about the physical world as one of these, the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically project into it, and then we, once we're projected in, we feel we're separate, we act as if we're separate, unless we're, I guess, enlightened. And then, but then when we come back, if sometimes we have to die, sometimes we have to just wake up from the dream, we realize that we were never in danger, we were never sick, we were never, nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. There in the Lord's a peace of God. And that's, that was, that jumped out at me in the Course in Miracles because it's so true. It brings a lot of peace, though. It really does.
Yeah, certainly does. Yeah, and it's always present. It's and you know, it becomes clear that the the seeming turmoil was only on the level of thinking or emotions,
right?
Which are not that, you know, this ever present awareness, this consciousness.
So why don't you tell our listening audience a little bit about your journey, how you came to study and, I guess, experience some of the things that led you to write the book.
Sure. I, like all of us at one point or another, was a seeker. I didn't come to spirituality, so to speak, through any intense suffering or major problems, as it seems some do.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was just sort of a general feeling of unsatisfaction with how life was going, and, you know, kind of a feeling of, is this all there is to it? And you know, and not having any presence of mind at first to not even look elsewhere, look beyond the world of what we seem to see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. And but at one point, I did start looking and started with different kinds of books, everything from sort of self-help and inspirational books and to a little bit of Eastern philosophy and just whatever sort of I was drawn to. Like we all, you know, we seem to experience it in little different ways, but it's underneath, it's really basically the same thing. So at one point, I really enjoyed the teachings of the Infinite Way, which was started by Joel Goldsmith, and which many of the listeners here might already be familiar with. And that just did a lot for me, clarified a lot of things about that, you know, consciousness is who the real self is, and it helped also to sort of remove all of my notions of a of there being some sort of a conceptual God off there somewhere in heaven, and, you know, who knows what, but helped do away with that. And then at one point, I came through a friend, came across the work of a man named Alfred Aiken, A-I-K-E-N, and he wrote from the standpoint of the absolute. And basically, the premise, in one sense, was the same. It was that consciousness, or what we call, sometimes called awareness, or the self with a capital S, or the one, or life, or love, is all there is, really. And it's not afar off. It's not off in some ultimate state. It is this present consciousness that's conscious and aware right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was, the main thing was that the way his presentation, or the way he put it, was that, look, it's consciousness itself, awareness itself, or the self, that is the one that's being conscious.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that a Peter or a Susan or anybody knows how to do. I don't know how to make, I don't keep awareness present and functioning by keeping my finger on the button all day long.
Mm-hmm.
It operates. And there is, you know, there's no person or personality involved in doing that. And that was, for me, a huge aha. And it sort of instantly took away the separate, the imaginary separate me, secondary me, as a Peter thinker or a Peter personality who felt he always had to get to awareness.
Right.
It sort of turned around. As, wait a minute, awareness is right here. And it's the one that's being that awareness. It's not something that a Peter can do. And, of course, a certain amount of mistaken identification with the body instead of as awareness, or with thoughts and with feelings and thinking, those are all me. And now, from this other perspective, it's clear that there's awareness here, and anyone can see this for themselves. Right now, there's awareness functioning, but again, that's not something that any personality knows how to do.
Right.
And then all the rest, whether you call them thoughts, emotions, a body, all of that is just stuff that one seems to be aware of, but that is not the one who is aware. And in that distinction, I don't mean to make a sense of separation there, but just in that distinction, one then instantly is no longer functioning on the level of just thoughts and emotions. They don't drive the bus anymore. We're not just sort of functioning as a state of reaction. Now one is able to use the thoughts and emotions rather than being used by them.
Yeah. So I am not my body. I'm not my sensations. And you go through this very well in the book. You go through all of the sensations and make it very clear that we're having them, that we're not our taste, touch, what we see, whatever.
Yeah.
Then we are not our emotions, and you go through that very well in the book, all the feeling aspects. You say, what does the book feel like versus what does it look like? There's a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
How does it make the book make you feel? Maybe the yellow color brings up an emotion from a childhood memory or something.
Mm-hmm.
So all these are feelings, but you are not your feelings. And then thoughts, that's the hardest one for people to get over, I think, because thought is what is difficult to get behind. We think we are our thoughts. And a friend of mine, Michael Rice, once said that, there's only one original sin, and sin is an ancient Aramaic term meaning to miss the mark. It's an archery term. And really, the only thought that we had that was in error was the idea of separation, because that idea is false. You can never be separated from your source. And so the minute we thought we were separate, I think then the universal mind came into being. And then I think from that, all the manifested worlds at all the various different vibrational rates came into being.
And
that was, when Adam fell, he fell in frequency.
I see. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You see? It's like... So what I like to do is try to get people back to the idea, and you did it very well in your book, that how could separation exist from, the consciousness, which is, as you say, omnipresent, omnipotent, and, all the other terms that you used to describe it. How could anything be separate from it? It logically it can't.
Yeah. It's, and, as you were saying earlier, Susan, this kind of thing holds true when one inquires for themselves in terms of, okay, sort of like taking inventory. What do we have right here?
Right.
There's awareness, and then there appear to be these other phenomena, whether you call them visual sensations or feelings of touch and the thinking and the emotions, and you can work through that and see if any of those things, like a thought, you know, can a thought itself ever be aware?
Is it,
you know, like when was the last time a thought was aware of you rather than it being the other way around?
Exactly.
Excuse me. And so that allows one, and again, at that point too, it is this same one sort of universal awareness. I don't, in some ways I like universal, sometimes I don't care for that word, but I'll say rather maybe unbounded.
Unbounded,
or infinite awareness, that is the one, the intelligence to whom this is clear. It's not thanks to a personality, really, because if there were no awareness present, none of this inquiry even could seem to go on. And it always comes back to this infinite, unbounded, and impersonal awareness is the one, you know, whose life this is.
That's very true, and I would like to suggest that still small voice that every human has experienced, I don't care who you are, from, you know, someone who's a cannibal to a homeless person to a president of the United States or to the, you know, to an avatar living in India. It doesn't matter. We've all experienced that still small voice. And I would say that still small voice is your awareness speaking to the personality. Especially in times of great distress.
Yeah.
Physical distress. I mean, I'm a surgeon, so you can imagine some of the things I get into.
Oh yeah.
And so I had this patient who got hit by a drunk driver and he was bleeding out, and I was like, everything I tried to do was still bleeding and it was getting critical, and so I said, okay, is this guy supposed to die or what? And then this voice comes in and says, no, do this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what I did, and he lived. So,
you know,
it's like you have to get sometimes really annoyed. You have to get really, you know, have you ever done that? Have you ever just really?
Oh, yeah.
Emotion brings on this guidance. It really does sometimes.
Yeah. It's as if sometimes they're is this sort of a sense of getting settled into some kind of comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes, you know, and a lot of times we think, oh, the spiritual is always very peaceful and
I don't think so.
Kind of bliss and all that. And, well, in the true sense, it is, because it's just one, you know, there are no opposites or opposition. However, in what appears as still, you know, what appears as our day-to-day living, sometimes a good, real, sharp talking to yourself and yelling, or, you know, just sort of snaps one out of that sort of energetic static or just sort of like a stagnancy that, you know, one can get stuck in that seems to cling sometimes.
I had some interesting things happen to me in my life where I was in great danger. One occurred about 2 weeks ago. I was in this house, and my house, I was asleep, and I had a house intrusion. Somebody came into my house. But, you know, I never felt fear. I never felt anything, because the minute it started, I had this constant narrative about what was going on and what I needed to do. And I had been guided to buy a stun gun about 2 weeks prior. So I had that right there. I was guided to be on the neighborhood watch thing about a month prior, so I knew that house intrusions were happening. And the alarm went off, and my first thought is, what is that noise? Because I never heard my house alarm go off before. And, you know, I was guided step by step what to do. And I went, and my, you know, the door was open, but the guy had fled. And so I was guided, you know, to close the door, lock it, put the alarm back on, search the house, call the police, notify neighborhood watch, whatever. But then after it was all over, I was never frightened. I was never worried about it. But I realized very much that I needed now to get X, Y, and Z. Had I stunned somebody, I had no way to tie them up. You know, I needed ties. I needed somehow to, I needed to think about what would need to happen.
Think it through, kind of.
Think it through. I needed to put cameras on the front door. You know, I have cameras on the side, but I need them on the front door now. Because the house intrusions are happening at 10:15 on a Sunday morning in a very, very, very secluded Dunwoody neighborhood.
Mm.
Very interesting, huh?
Mm.
I mean, the police couldn't believe it.
The
police couldn't, the police couldn't believe that he would come so far into a subdivision.
Wow.
So, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That's what I believe that my guidance or my consciousness or my, you know, whatever it is that is my awareness that you speak of in the book, shook it up for me because I wasn't paying enough attention to my security.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, why do I even need security? Do you see what I mean? It's like, it's very interesting, isn't it? It's very interesting. We don't always know what we need. Sometimes we might think that nothing can ever harm us, but that might not be true. Like we live in these physical bodies that are sometimes in dangerous areas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's important is to follow that guidance. I was guided to get the stun gun, and I went ahead and got it. You know, I was guided, you know, in other situations to be armed, and I am armed. You know, the point is, following your guidance is very, very important, even though you don't know why you're being guided to do what you're being guided to do. Now, 2 days later, I was guided to go out and stand at my mailbox, which I never do. And I looked up the street, and there was the postal delivery lady. And she was coming down the street, and she said, "I've never seen you." I said, "No, I've never been here when you're here." But I said, "I wanted to tell you that there's somebody out here breaking into houses in broad daylight." And so I told her what I knew, and she said, "Thank you very much. She'd be aware of it." Now, do you think that consciousness might use her to tip off the police since she's going around the neighborhoods? Interesting, So you do. A lot of times, it's just you follow your guidance.
Yeah, yeah. And by, you know, some might use a word, say meditating or pondering, and in the book, one thing that I like to emphasize too is when talking about awareness, and often it'll say start from or as awareness, what that means is basically being still, being quiet, or asking what is awareness to pure awareness. And that is not a question that can be answered by thinking.
No.
It's not supposed to be. And in sort of hanging out as this, it might, you know, to thinking at first might think, boy, that's pretty boring. There's nothing going on there. But what it is that stillness, that calm, the clarity without the, you know, it's sort of the absence of all the mental clutter.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, then that's when what is called the still small voice can be heard sometimes,
right,
too. It's always there. It's just that in the book there's an analogy. It's not meant exactly in this sense, but it holds up here, is that it's like when there's really loud music playing in a room, one can't hear a whisper that someone on one side of the room might be making. And yet, the whisper is there, potentially perceptible, but it's just obscured by the heavier, denser vibration of the music. But when we calm down the so-called inner mental music by asking, well, what's true of awareness? What does awareness know itself to be?
Mm-hmm.
Is awareness any kind of thinking or any kind of emotions? No. And what is that? And I love asking the question, how much does awareness weigh to pure awareness?
Right.
And, you know, when there's a feeling of depression or weightiness, as we all seem to experience out, you know, when the body has to go out in the world, that one right there. And again, it's a matter of letting awareness answer.
Mm-hmm.
that in the, you know, experientially rather than intellectually.
When I was waking up, so to speak, I mean, you know the process by which you follow your guidance and then you become aware of more than what you were aware of before. I actually had my car radio break 11 times. It was under warranty, so I kept taking it back in until I figured out I needed to turn my radio off because Spirit wanted me to be quiet so I could hear.
Oh, my. Okay, go ahead. I accidentally hit a button on my phone as I was shifting, and I'm sorry. I thought I scared the heck out of me. I thought I cut you off.
Oh, no.
Okay, sorry about that. Would you mind repeating what you were saying?
No. When I was in the process of waking up or becoming aware of what is in your book, which is extremely succinct, and I highly recommend people read it, my car radio broke 11 times.
Yes, amazing.
It was under warranty, and I kept getting it fixed. However, I finally figured out that I needed to turn it off because I was supposed to be quiet. And what I heard after that was amazing. I mean, I would hear all sorts of stuff that I couldn't possibly have known.
Mm.
And, I mean, everything from someone's going to steal the picture out of the patient bathroom. And of course, I go, no, they wouldn't do that. And then they did, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
But almost every day, you know, when I'm driving, I don't have the radio on, and I hear a constant stream of stuff that's going to happen, things that patients are in trouble, patients that are going to get in trouble if I don't do this, patients that, you know, employees that are going to do this and need to, yeah, it's just, it's an amazing thing
that
you will listen, you know,
if
you will listen, you will get guidance on what's coming up and what you can do to avoid it. If it's negative, or what you can do to, you know, not avoid it if it's positive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think the many masters who've come forth in the different religions were trying to let us know, is that we have this connection to our, in Christianity, it's our Father. And Jesus said, I and my Father are one. And that's critical when you're healing. If you can go back to that awareness that Jesus was in when he healed, then you too can experience what it is like to be in that state of love that then creates the healings.
Yeah.
It's not that you do them. It's that you merge with the energy, which is, Jesus called it our Father, but that would be, in your book, it would be, you know, the absolute beingness, or you have many names for it, but it is a state of being outside of emotion, feeling, thought, and the physical world.
Yeah, yeah. And what's so interesting and wonderful about that is, I don't know how else to say it, but it sort of depends on how we even look at what might appear as a healing or an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of depends on which side of the fence we look from, meaning from what appears as the human side of things, or the relative or the apparent, it does appear as an improvement or a healing. And yet, from the absolute side of the fence, it's rather that perfection always is, eternally is, and nothing changes and nothing changes and nothing changes. And there really is no lesser to this one, which is the one being conscious and aware to begin with, first of all, to this one. There is no lesser state, no finite or limited mind that could experience a problem. It never even happened to utter perfection, absolute perfection. And that's why what seems to be the appearance of the problem dissolves, because to the consciousness there, it really has no place, no presence.
Right. It's just like turning on a light in a room and all of the negative dark stuff just disappears. Not
exactly.
Anything happened to it. It's just that the light happened to transmute it into something different, you know.
Exactly.
And it can happen, and it can happen instantaneously, which is where spontaneous remission comes from. I'm looking at a book here. I have this book right in front of me called Spontaneous Remission. It's 100 cases put out by Noetic Science, you know. So.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, when in the healing room, you know, basically the patients come to me for healings, and they ask me what's going to be healed, and my answer is, I don't know. You know, you're going to tell me. So we go into this altered state where this, you know, you might call it energy if you're an energy healer, but you, as you point out in your book, it's not really energy because energy also doesn't exist. You know, so basically, you go into this state where you merge with, you consciously, in terms of your smaller conscious, become one with this consciousness that is all that is, including the patient, which is here, you know, the patient's in front of you, and then you merge and you become one with all that is, and then whatever energy needs to flow, flows. And I do think energy does flow because you can kind of feel it, and you can see it as
seems
light.
Seems to,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it seems to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the patient will call me 3 days later and say, well, you know, my sister, who hadn't spoken to me in 20 years, called me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's so true.
I'm not always privy to this information. You know,
yeah.
I don't know the details of this patient's life. But it's not always what the patient expected. I try not to expect anything because basically I don't know what's going to happen. You know that.
I'm
sometimes told not to do a healing on someone, which is interesting. You know, that's not what you need to be doing right now. You need to go out and do something else, you know.
Well,
and so it's very interesting, but I think we're all destined, and maybe shortly so, I mean, in the next few years, hopefully, destined to learn about this guidance system we have within us and to merge with it and to listen to it, like you say, to be in a conscious state of meditation always, though. Not that we have to go meditate somewhere. I think we need to walk in this state.
It's going to get to that. You know, it's like now it's something, and it seems necessary, seemingly at first, that it's something we have to do in a room off by ourselves. You know, where everything is quiet.
We have to practice.
But, it seems to take that, and yet, you know, one can even in the middle of the day, say in a busy work environment, one can ask oneself. Okay, the fact that the body goes out of the house and goes somewhere doesn't shut awareness off.
Mm-mm.
You know, it doesn't make being not be. And one can, I used to struggle a lot, for example, when I would be in the workplace, and it feels like we get distracted and you start feeling different, what we would call energy patterns of the workplace rather than that more of a calm, maybe. And peace and so on. And then I would feel, okay, there'd be a little guilt too, like, oh, see, I've let down my whatever, and now I've gotten caught up in all this stuff. And now I, Peter, have to make my way back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it seems. But when it's turned around, and it's again, wait a minute, this awareness that's still present right here, even though there seems to be a lot of stuff jangling on the surface, this awareness still is present, and by the way, can it be made to go away? It was almost like rather than try it make it be more present, it's a matter of wait, it can't be made to go away, and there's nobody else actually who has to connect with it, because the only one that can be it is itself, and it's right here. And so the sense, again, the sense of a separate me who felt he had to be as aware as awareness itself, that was what the problem was. And
well, that was the idea of separation. I mean, again,
exactly.
That thought that your personality was separate from the energy that enlivens you. I mean, the beingness that actually gives you life.
Yeah. It can't be. Go away.
The sunbeam cannot be separate from the sun. That's what the masters teach.
Yeah.
And so it really is a pretty simple, waking up is really pretty simple. Didn't Buddha say, I am not different or better than you, I am simply awake or something like that? It was a beautiful statement that he made.
I don't know exactly, to be honest.
But it was something to that effect, you know, I am you know, basically the idea is that you're still asleep and I'm awake. That's the only difference. So this waking up is really just a thought experiment that then leads you to a conclusion, and there can be no other conclusion, logically, I mean, if you think it out, if you're going to use the mind to get there. And you do it in your book. I mean, that's, you just take it step by step. And then let's talk a little bit about time, because that, I think time trips people up. And
that's,
you have a great chapter. You want to talk a little bit about why time is also illusionary?
Oh, sure, yeah. There are several ways that one can look at it, but one of the things, and I want to back up just a little bit, if you will. Well, first of all, awareness itself, and again, please, no one that's listening, just don't just take my word for this, but see for yourself that this very present awareness, and I say use the word present very specifically, because it is just that. Awareness itself, so-called always, is present. It cannot vacate being present and just, again, observe or notice or inquire and see if awareness ever goes away or changes. And it doesn't. And what seems to change, we'll say, well, there still seems to be a lot of change. But if you really zero in on what you're referring to or talking about, you'll see that it's all the phenomena, the apparent, or what all the aware of stuff, such as thoughts or sensations and feelings and all that, that seem to change and to come and go. Awareness, again, just is changelessly present. It is present tense, and the fact that nothing can be said to exist outside of or beyond awareness means awareness literally is what we call the present itself, or the or now itself.
Right, eternal now.
Eternal now. And one of the things that, it's in the book there, I think it's in chapter 12, and it just was so striking, but it was this question, did you ever stop to ask yourself why it's always now? Why is that? Where does that come from? It's, you know, in a sense, it's, when you stop to think about it, it's kind of weird. My gosh,
it is,
it's always now.
I
don't care if it appears to be the morning and the body's getting out of bed, it's now. Or if the body's at lunch or coming home at the end of the day, it's now. Why is that? And what it is thanks to the presence of this ever-present awareness, being. And so awareness is that we tend to think that maybe awareness is aware of the present, as if they were two separate things. But actually, awareness is what we call the present.
Right.
And
the eternal now.
Yeah. And now, to take it a step further, when we talk about what's called, you know, our everyday experience or finite experience, I refer to it in the book sometimes, meaning, you know, what the body appears to do throughout the day, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm sure it has probably been discussed on your show many times, that it seems on one level as if it's sort of a separate objective physical material world of all these separate solid objects.
Right.
And any scientist today will say, no, that's not really the case. It's all can be reduced to energy or quantum particles and so on, and it's not separate solid objects. It's all this one inter-reactionary mingling stuff, and it's more like a sort of a fluid to it.
And you have all these parallel worlds that have actually been proven by physics now, which was amazing to me.
Yeah.
These aren't even theories anymore. These are actually proven.
Exactly.
If people want to watch The Universe, there's all sorts of very interesting things on that show. So, you know, it's not just what we see and perceptually perceive, it's actually that there's
so much more
quantum possibilities out there.
That's right. Yeah. And the interesting thing about that is that, and again, I in the book, just for sake of explanation and simplicity's sake, is that it seems that and there's an experiment there that shows one, you know, if a lot, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are not into science or quantum physics, but one can see for oneself that nothing in what we call the everyday world exists separate from the mind. By mind I mean the senses and the thinking and the emotions. It's not like the mind knows about the world. The mind is the world.
Right.
Or the
and that's
universe.
That's pointed out in the exercises in The Course in Miracles.
Okay.
You know, the first exercise is look around the room. Nothing in this room exists. You know, it's except that I, in my mind, have it there.
As a and what helps to see this is that in the book I've talked about it as being merely mental. Or sort of, in some Eastern teachings, refer to it as thought. And, there are several types of thought. Sometimes they're called subtle objects, like right now, if I were to think of a rose, just my thought of a rose, that sort of mental image, that would be a subtle object. And then the actual so-called rose growing in a garden outside the house would be what's called a gross object,
right.
Or, you know, a piece of furniture would be a gross object. But through inquiry, one can see for oneself that there really isn't a separate object there. It, too, would be mental because the mind experiences sensations of that object, mm-hmm. but all there are the sensations. There aren't the sensations and an object. There are only the sensations. So the reason I go into all this is that there's unwittingly or when one is functioning on that level, there's a tendency to think that there is this world of time out there that has this sort of independent presence of its own,
mm-hmm.
and that time has its own presence and functions. But actually, time and all the change that seems to be experienced is one with this mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when one then says, okay, now let's take the stance as this awareness that is ever present, and which is the one being aware right now, by the way. So when one starts here, you can look at what seems to be experience, and for example, the notion even that there was, well, let's say a couple of years ago, or a couple of days ago, or even maybe about 40 minutes ago in a past when this phone conversation began.
Mm-hmm.
All, if one starts or identifies as awareness and looks at all the evidence for there being a past time, all there is actually is just a current thought rising up.
Right,
and saying,
of a past time.
Of a past time.
Right.
But there is no evidence of any time separate from that current thought. And, you know, thinking, because it seems to be conditioned, will say, oh, yeah, okay, that's fine. But there were all these years back there that led up to this present moment. I can see that, you know, my thought coming up in this moment is,
mm-hmm.
Is just coming up now. But there were all these years that led up to this moment. And then you say, wait a minute. From the stance of this present awareness, one can see that even the notion that there's this long background of a past is the only place that it is, the only evidence of it is in another thought just trying to come up right now. And that's where all of the past would seem to be. That's the whole of it.
And that brings us to the concept that probably the thing that can best, at least in my mind, best described what we're in is a hologram moving through time.
It seems to be. Yeah, that's what it would be. There's nothing, you know, separate or physical there. That's what it seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, again, when one takes one stance as awareness, which only is present tense, and oh, there's another piece to this too, which is that we'll say, okay, I see this about the nature of time, that all it really is just a thought trying to arise in this current moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll say, but awareness is, well, it's eternal. It's been around. It has been around forever.
Right.
And
it never got created either.
And it never got created. But even the notion that awareness itself or the present itself always has been present. You see, there, we'll assume the present always has been present over this long period of time. Yet that, too, is just more thought trying to arise now. So not even this present, what I'm saying is that this present awareness, present right now, is absolutely historyless. There's no, there's, and you know, that might sound like a quite a shocking thing, but in terms of practicality, and in terms of what even what still may appear as our world affairs, what that is pointing out is that this present awareness, which is all that exists, it's the entirety of existence because nothing exists outside of it.
Right.
This life is literally brand new right now.
Right.
Life
right.
always is at the standpoint of being brand new, and that's why the subtitle for the book, Now, meaning as this present awareness,
mm-hmm.
life is completely new. And that means, you know, sometimes we hear the term like abiding here as this presentness or starting here or being here, functioning as this, one sees that there is no accumulation of any kind of history of world problems.
Mm-hmm.
There actually is no history anywhere of any kind of disease, of any kind of lack or poverty or all of what appear to be these would-be problems. One can see that to this present awareness, there's only present awareness. And it itself is brand new, seemingly on the instant,
mm-hmm.
every instant.
And it didn't have to be created because creation
no.
can only occur in the context of time.
That's right. Yeah. And
if time's illusionary, then that you throw that idea out the window. But you have to
you
go beyond thought to get to, and I like what you say in the
yeah.
book. If you really want to experience this, you have to experience that
yeah.
part of you that is actually all of you, because there's nothing else,
no.
that
yeah.
is absolute consciousness or absolute awareness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why getting seriously ill or having near-death experiences is a good way to do that, because absolutely everything else is taken away for you to worry about.
That's right.
You're
yeah.
just there with it. You know?
There's no more sense of clinging to, well, maybe I ought to hold on to this because it'll do me some good later on.
You're
just
going to be here later
that.
On. Really.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, your body. But you know that you, I mean, that's what I was saying, as far back as I can remember, and in every dangerous situation I've ever been in, or every critical situation, which is, you know, as a trauma surgeon, there's been a few, that awareness is what guides me. And it's always
sure.
true, and it's always still, calm. There's no fear.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I've had knives to my throat, guns to my head. You know, I've had all of that, and always it's just the calm coming through, going, you're going to be fine, just do this, do that, you know. And
yeah.
and I think that's really why what we're all trying to get to is just to be one with that awareness and not
yeah.
have any thoughts of fear, emotions coming up that we can't control
yeah.
or anything else to distract us from the instruction and guidance that's coming from that source.
Yeah. And just to sort of continue along that line, the beauty of it is that for awareness to be present is absolutely effortless.
Right.
It is not struggling to be present. You know, the only one who would seem to struggle would be Peter thinking or Peter feelings, but when the identification is as awareness and not with the thoughts or feelings I seem to be aware of, there's a kind of that, aha, here it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, and a great deal of clarity comes with it, too. I mean, it's like
yeah.
Gee,
yeah.
I didn't see that before. Well, we're coming up to our last 5 minutes. Would you like to give your contact information for our listeners?
Sure. The website, which is the best way, is www.consciousnessisall.com. And there's a lot going on there. There are some free chapters from the book. There are 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other excerpts. There are a number of videos and audios, and there's also a blog called Reality Check, where people can, you know, start a discussion or ask questions about whatever they want to. And the reason for the title Reality Check is that the perspective or the stance is always, okay, let's start out by, so to speak, identifying as this awareness rather than starting with, you know, all the thinking or all the questions. We'll deal with
mm-hmm.
them, but let's be clear as to who it is that's aware here in the first place, kind of thing.
Right.
And I'll also say, I think it will be up and running today. If people prefer sort of an audio version,
mm-hmm.
I recently completed an audio, I call it an audio supplement to
mm-hmm.
the book, Consciousness is All Plus,
mm-hmm.
which is like an audio book. It consists of reading from the text, but also has a lot of spontaneous commentary. And
mm-hmm.
if one cares to, one can order a chapter at a time, or for $1.99, like a, you know, MP3 download, or
mm-hmm.
you can order the entire book. But that's a brand new thing, I think, as of today.
Great.
Should be
but
up and running.
As we come to the end of the hour, I want to mention, because I believe this is one of the most important concepts, is that if you really look at what that absolute being is, if you study, as I have, we interviewed P. Atwater on her 4,000 near-death experiences, you know, her interview of 4,000 people with near-death
wow.
experiences. But I think we can conclude that this beingness, this consciousness, this absolute being that we are, that we all are, that there really is no separation, that this being is absolute unconditional love, because
yeah.
that's the evidence, the scientific evidence. I think it's important for people who worship science, which I'm surrounded by, to understand that the evidence is that that is our beingness. That is what we truly are.
Mm. Yeah, and even science is pointing right to it, which
yeah.
is so wonderful. Yeah.
It really is. So
yeah.
I'm going to suggest that people get your book, Consciousness is
well,
All.
Well, thanks
now,
very much.
Now, life is completely new, because there's a lot more than what we've spoken about in this hour in the book. I also wanted to do a few announcements. Next week, we are interviewing Dr. Lynn Horowitz. A further discussion on the flu pandemic and other viral threats or non-threats, depending on what you're looking at. Also, on the 27th, we're interviewing Pat Lynn Kyle, Heal Your Mind, Rewire Your Brain, Applying the Exciting New Science of Brain Synchronicity for creativity, peace, and presence. And I guess the presence would be what we've been talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
Noetic Science is March 18th, which is this coming Thursday at 7:15 at the Dunwoody office. Trish McKinnon is going to be speaking about her new book, The Secret Teachings of Jesus. And that's a great book. I highly recommend that anybody on the path read this book, because it really it takes a lot of the mystery out of what Jesus came to do and what he was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed our interview. It's been great.
Oh, so have I, very much. Thank you very much, Susan. And I would just like to say also, thank you so much for all the wonderful work you are doing with your shows like this, and just putting it out there and putting it out there and putting it out there. You know, just making so much available. It's just a super marvelous thing.
Well, I think we're coming on a time now where people will be more actively seeking. And all these shows are available for free. I mean, they're up on www.plasticus.com under Resources and Radio. And the previous shows are on RadioSandySprings.com under Temple of Health. So these are all free shows, and people who have... especially who don't like to read books and would prefer to, while they're in their car or while they're in their house, listen to things. I think we have a wealth of information
yeah.
out there, and
yeah.
really
definitely.
Have enjoyed gathering all of the different wonderful authors that I've interviewed.
Mm. Well, there have been plenty.
There have.
For sure.
Well, thanks so much, Peter.
You too, Susan. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much
Alrighty.
For the opportunity. Okay,
Take
great
care.
Talking with you. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
This is Temple of Health Radio Show, and we will be with you next week.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastikos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastikos?
Plastikos is in Dunwoody. Plastikos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastikos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.